Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it, especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 358 of Wheel Bearings, we got the Ford F-150 Tremor, the Mazda CX-70, Toyota speeds up charging on the all-wheel drive BZ4X, Electrify America is limiting charging to 85%, Nissan adds an off-road-ish version of the Rogue, Ford unveils their 2025 Dakar Rally Challenger, Mazda is putting a Toyota hybrid system into the CX-50, and Ford launches a Polestar 2 clone in Europe. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 358 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam of Blue All Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from CarBuzz.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And what have the two of you been driving this week? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. And also, I have to say, when I see SAE written on something, I literally think to myself now when I read things, I'm like, SAE International. Like, I read International. That way in my head now. It's like,
God. I get emails about, like, hey, tomorrow's a holiday in Japan. I'm like, oh, man, I wish I was working in Japan.
Right? But only on that holiday. Then you want to live in England or Spain or Italy.
Yeah, get those English bank holidays.
I just want to live in Japan.
That's a good point there. You know, but then, you know, in Europe, you basically get the whole month of August off.
You do. We'd have 2 weeks and we'd all be on vacation for a month.
This sounds like a first world problem because it is, but if you're a journalist and you're trying to get a hold of any German automaker in August, you might as well just give up. That's our problem. Every August you send something to the American PR working. They're like, okay, but the people I need to ask aren't around.
You're like, I can get back to you in September. You're like, oh crud, that's right, it's August.
Yeah. I've been working for the last month or so on a project with a client overseas, and you know, I'm going to be on vacation the last week of July, and they're not planning to actually release this until September, but we're trying to wrap it up basically by the end of next week, because August, you know, everybody's gone. Mm-hmm. And so we're just trying to get it done before then.
The world disappears.
Into the wind.
So what I have this week.
You were driving something.
I was driving.
Yeah. From Japan, where I want to move to.
From Japan, where you want to move to, Robbie. I have 2025 Mazda CX-70, which is all new. This is a new car, but it kind of is.
Sort of.
Yeah, because it's actually the CX-90, but just yank out the third row.
It's an all new badge.
Yeah, it has a nameplate, right? So it basically is, if you don't want three rows of seating, and not everybody does, but you want something a little bigger anyway, because you have bigger cargo needs, Mazda CX-70. And I just went before the show, actually, the latest recording. I'm like, well,
that whole bigger cargo needs thing.
I know. Yeah. And so I was like, well, maybe, you know, or you can fit, you don't have to deal with the third seat, right? You're thinking, there's no difference inside. You guys, I just crunched the numbers. And there is a 0.4 cubic feet difference behind what is behind the second row, a little smidgelet less in the
space. Well, that extra little bit of space in the CX-70 might be useful to somebody, right?
But then if you fold those and you want to just go what's behind the first row, it is 0.1 more in the CX-70. It's the same car. So it's basically like, do you not want a third row? You don't want a third row. You just think it's useless. You don't want it there. You don't have to be bothered with it. You just want to have a big open cargo space instead. Voila, CX-70. So that said, I actually really like this car as I'm picking on it. Now that I've picked on, like, why did they make this? It's
See, on one hand, I'm like, well, I never want a third row. But I'm like, but if it's the same, like – like maybe
it would be
there. Maybe I need the third. Like maybe I need something to put something in. I don't want rattling around.
You,
I guess
you want that seat that you could stick something on instead of just finding a way to keep it contained in a little pod.
Yeah.
I don't know, but so I like the CX-70. I do because I tend to like Mazdas. I mean, they all have that sort of like nice driving characteristics. They're pretty peppy. This has 323 horsepower and 369 pound feet of torque. It's a 3.3 liter six cylinder, and I have the PHEV. Which I think PHEVs are fun. I like them. I know that there's still people that say PHEVs are meh, they're stupid because you got all the mechanical.
Well, they're wrong.
They're wrong. Yeah, they're wrong. There's good reason to get a PHEV, and yeah, this gets you, and you don't have to. You can get a gas one if you want. This has the exterior is the wrong color. This was rhodium white. And the interior, I know. Boo, boo.
I just had to wash my white car yesterday. Yeah. I'm like, boo, the whole time.
Yep. It was funny. So on Carbuzz, we all do our reviews and we, of course, have an image and it's like in a line, all of them. It's like a bar, like across the site. The last couple of weeks, apparently all we've gotten is silver cars. Manager's like, look, could you guys work on that? I'm like, we can't pick the color. Silver, white. So, and he's like, what do you have? I'm like, I have a white CX-70 this week. I'm not helping you at all. So this is white. The interior is red Napa leather, which isn't like a cherry red. It's a little bit darker. So it looks nice. I actually think a white car with a red interior looks really pretty. It's a nice contrast. It really stands out. So I like how it looks. But then again, I pretty much like how Mazda's everything looks. The interiors are so pretty. They do such a good job. What are they? They're not technically luxury. What are they called? They had a word and I can't remember if they used it one thing. And
it's premium.
Is it just premium?
Near premium, near luxury. I don't know.
Aspiring towards luxury, not quite luxury, but really, really close. I don't know. they're almost like they're just a skosh behind, especially when you get to the top trims in any Mazda. You would be hard pressed if you didn't have Mazda badging on there to know that you weren't in something that was truly a luxury car. Doesn't quite get as pricey as a luxury car, but they do come at a premium, hence the premium thing. So I was driving the Premium Plus, which is the top trim in the lineup. I did not look at
very
that.
Very original.
I chose that word. Yep. And this one, and you know, being the PHEV, so this is coming higher in. It's $57,450. Guesses on destination, gentlemen.
$1,295.
I'm going to go $1,395.
Sam, it's
$1,375.
Oh, you're off $20. You were
75,
close, right? So you were really close. So $1,375, which is, I don't know, feels like in the zone. Doesn't feel crazy anymore. I feel like it has to get over two before I feel like it's crazy. What number makes you think it's crazy when you look down at a Monroney and you see a destination? What number do you go? What are you thinking? Like what number?
I still think anything over 1,000 is crazy. I don't understand why that's a thing.
How many of them are?
Certainly anything over 15 is getting pretty ridiculous.
Okay,
I feel like Sam has said it again and again. They're just padding.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's not like you can drive to the factory and take delivery of the factory gate and avoid paying that charge.
Right.
Even if you go to the factory, you're still going to pay the delivery charge. This is a non-optional fee.
Yeah.
So why is it not just included in the sticker price? It should. If Congress wants to do one thing, change that.
They can't seem to do
anything else. At least just mandate that the delivery charge must be included in the MS. Any mandatory charge, that you cannot get out of paying, must be included in the MSRP.
That would
be cool.
I feel like that's a good idea.
Sadly, no. So what you're looking at total on this puppy is $59,420. Now, like I said, it is very premium. You have all those leather interiors. It's very comfortable. It's very quiet. Driving it has more of a premium feel. Like it really Okay, I have a really horrible comparison, but nonetheless, it is the comparison I have this week. So I have this beautiful $60,000 car in my driveway, and I've been driving it back and forth all week, and really nice, really comfortable. My daughter, who is away at an internship, has an older Kia Rio. It's 2016. I know, there's nothing alike about these cars, but it was fun. I drove it simply because it can't sit in the garage for 2 months undriven. So yesterday was the day. It's like, honey, we're taking out the Kia Rio. So we ran our little errands in this yesterday. First of all, I discovered just how small that car is. Holy bejesus, is that tiny. But I took a corner in my neighborhood at a stop sign that I go through every time I come back into my neighborhood. Apparently, there's a pothole that if you're driving any other car, feels like, ba-dum-bump. If you're driving a car that doesn't have more of a better suspension, it feels like you've driven through the Grand Canyon. I was like, oh my gosh. So remember a contrast to see just how much something with better suspension components and a focus on being smooth and a focus on being comfortable, man, it makes a difference. Because I had no idea that pothole was that bad until I slammed through it in my daughter's car. Sorry, kid. So yeah, it was a striking.
You'll pay for the new suspension arms, right?
Exactly. I'm paying for everything else there.
Don't say anything. They'll be fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I that's the thing. I didn't take it fast. Like I was at a stop sign and just started to go forward. So yeah, it was a pretty aggressive, but it sort of hit home. You know, we drive so many new cars and so many high-end cars. Very rarely do we even drive the base trim in a car. So to have one that's a couple of years old, still in decent shape, but was never a fancy car to begin with, it's like, oh, these things make a difference. Blam, as I went through there. So I did like driving it. The one thing that I still, and I actually don't know if it's better or worse. You know, I really don't like their infotainment system. Mazda knows that they're not.
Scoring. No,
I don't think you've mentioned that before.
This is the first I've heard of it.
I know, right? So surprise. So this one, it has a 12.3-inch screen and you can actually reach the screen. It's not like set way back on the dashboard. And the reason is because they're now making it so that when you have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, it is a touchscreen. And the reason being, from what Mazda has said, is that they don't want you using a touchscreen. They'd prefer you do not. They prefer you use voice or use their little rotary dial controller. But that ecosystem is set up to be touch. So when you're trying, so it just works better. So it's to make it function more smoothly and it's supposed to be better. Well, it's great. I love it when the touchscreen is there. But then what happens is you have this confusion in your head. For some reason, you don't have Apple CarPlay on and you're like, what? Crud. Wait, back here. So I don't know if it's better or worse to have this half and half business. I want an all or nothing.
The inconsistency is not great.
Right? Like either everything is touchscreen, which is what I want, and Sam and Robbie can argue with me, especially Sam, or everything is not touchscreen. I think the half and half might actually be a worse solution.
It's mode confusion.
It's mode confusion.
And on the other hand, you can use CarPlay and Android Auto with the rotary controller. Mm-hmm. It does work.
Yes.
Work is a term.
What is that?
It functions.
Yeah.
You can make it happen.
You can push the dial up and down and left and right and move around the screen, you know, to get the various touch targets and twist it, you know, to move around to the various targets on the screen. Mm-hmm. Just like you can, you know, in a BMW with iDrive, you can do that as well. So it works. You know, it's the projection interfaces are not optimized for that type of control.
Right.
But they do work.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to avoid the mode confusion, you can do that. But
I want it to be all touchscreen. Yeah. That's what I want. I'm not going to get that, but that's what I want. So I tried it out. Yeah. I tried it out. I'm like, is this better? I'm like, yay. And I'm like, wait, and even my husband was confused for somebody. He hopped in the car and he went to touch the screen. It only works when it's Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Why? I'm like, I'm not Mazda. Don't
because
to me, because Mazda said so. So yes. That was really my main.
Them's the rules.
Yeah. And that's really my main gripe. I mean, otherwise I like this vehicle. I think it's lovely. It's attractive. It has quality trim throughout. It is very nice to drive. Responsive engine, great handling, a nice little cruiser. You know, if you want a larger SUV, that's a two row. I really liked it. I just don't like the infotainment, and it was the wrong color.
To your point about the price, the $60,000 price, yeah, $60,000 is not cheap. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember when I did the first drive on the CX-90, whenever it was, I went through the pricing, and you know, for a Mazda, it's on the high side of what we have come to expect for Mazda, for the Mazda brand. But if you start comparing it to some of the traditional premium brands like Volvo or BMW or Mercedes-Benz, and compare it to similar vehicles, you know, so like if you put up the CX-90 versus a Volvo XC90, you know, which are roughly the same size vehicle, similar performance, you know, I think, you know, the interiors, you know, in terms of being luxury vehicles, they're pretty comparable. The XC90 starts at 60 grand and goes up from there.
Right.
Whereas, you know, here, you know, you're topping out somewhere around $60,000-ish. Mm-hmm. And same thing, you know, compare this against an X5, you know, or a Mercedes GLE or a GLS, you know, you're looking at a lot more money for similar sized, similar performing vehicles that I don't think necessarily offer any significantly greater amount of luxury.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. That's the thing. Like you said, 60 grand is not cheap, but it's still cheaper than what some of the luxury vehicles are. And you don't feel like you're getting cheated in this. It's a beautiful car inside. So there is, I feel like it's a neat, Mazda sits in a neat spot because they have decent performance. They have decent handling. And they're just stunning interiors. You can't get this, you know, and even when you go to the lower trims, they still look so darn good. I don't think other automakers pull this off as well. They might in their very top trim of their vehicles, even sometimes then they don't. But when you get to the base trim in any lineup, then suddenly it starts to feel like you're in a less than premium vehicle. Mazda keeps it through the whole lineup. Doesn't matter which one you get in. So yeah, they are more expensive, but I feel like you're very much getting a good value if you want that experience, but don't actually want to jump up a whole level to a luxury vehicle.
Yeah, even a Genesis GV80, and Genesis is a brand, you know, that we have traditionally, we've typically, you know, considered it a good value among premium brands, you know, starts at $58,000. Mm-hmm. So again, like the Volvo, you know, it's starting where the Mazda pretty much tops out.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just going to remind everyone, you can get a Miata for $29,000.
That is true.
It's been fun.
Every time we talk about Mazda, I immediately like, $30,000. I'm like, sure is.
We had some beautiful weather here the other day, and it was like warm, but not humid and not raining, which is a first for us. And I got on the highway. I swear to God, I'd driven like 5 miles, and I think I saw four or five different Miatas, and I saw more after I messaged you, Sam. I was like, Sam, I feel like your people are here. There's everywhere. Everywhere I look, there's some guy with this woman with her hair all over the place. Guy just, you know, big smile on his face. Everyone was out in their Miatas. It's funny because you don't see them for a good chunk of the year because New England snow. But this was the day they're all like, to heck with it. Today's the day. I'm taking advantage of the weather. They were everywhere. I'm very happy.
And you can also get Mazda 3s starting at about $25,000.
Yeah, the Mazda 3 is nice.
Yeah.
I'm sad that the wagon, you can't get all-wheel drive manual.
Yeah.
But whatever. You can get a Mazda 3 wagon, which is, you know, with all-wheel drive.
So you mean the hatchback?
Yeah, hatchback, whatever you want to call it. Everything's a wagon. Actually, everything's a crossover nowadays.
Yeah. Okay. Robbie, what about you?
So I have the EQS, but I've only driven it like a grand total of like 25 miles, 30 miles, because I've been super busy. I just did a whole video about something. I don't know. It's on the internet. What was that video about? Does anyone remember? Preconditioning and heat pumps. I did a video in the dead of summer for people who are driving their car in the dead of winter. Someone from New Zealand thanked me.
It's evergreen content.
It's evergreen content, but I thought I better do it now. That way we can resurface it in the winter and I don't have to like be under the gun for it. Anyway, so I have this EQS, the 450, and I really haven't driven it very far. But I will say that there is a after being in the i7, which is the vehicle that I drove down to LA and back, and I used for this this video about battery preconditioning, the difference in like what BMW is offering you in the i7 versus the EQS, really any other luxury EV is stark. It is, that i7 is, it's got all the bells and whistles and it's just a really, really good car. So I'll talk more about the EQS next week. In addition to, I'll probably be talking about the BMW XM. So I'll have a double cars for next week. But for now, I've driven the EQS like a bunch of times at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know what new I can add to it, but yeah, it's still smooth like butter.
Okay. Well, I'll be driving the EQS SUV when I'm out in California for our vacation.
Oh, that'd be nice.
So I'll be able to share some thoughts on that afterwards.
The SUV is better than the sedan because you can sit in the back seats and be comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and for someone who personally would pick a sedan over an SUV for any other reason, if you're looking at the EQS lineup, just get the SUV if you want that rear Mercedes deal.
Okay. Awesome.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. And if you order before December 13th, you will save 25% off on your whole order. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, let's see. I had the the 2024 Ford F-150 Raptor. No, not Raptor. Tremor.
Tremor.
The other one. The Tremor. It's a big truck. You know, F-150s are big trucks.
It's a big truck. Thank you, Lee.
It's a big truck. Like, you're not totally insane. You don't want the Raptor, but you still want a little extra something.
Tremor. Not as big as a Super Duty. Not as ridiculously off-roady as a Raptor. But you know, if you want to have some off-road capability, have some armor underneath to protect the mechanical bits, you know, have some, you know, some skid plates and some, some all-terrain tires and stuff. They've got the Tremor for you, which is kind of their middle of the road off-roady-ish, off-roadish type version of the F-150. You know, they've got you can get on the XL or XLT. I think you can get the FX4 package, which is kind of your entry level off-road, and then Raptor at the high end, and then Tremor in the middle. Well,
sounds like a little song. Yeah. Raptor at the high end, Tremor in the middle.
The F-150 is a really good truck. You know, there's a reason why they sell so many of them, you know, because as full size trucks go, you know, we've got there's some really great options out there. You got, you know, the GM trucks, the Silverado and the Sierra, you got the Rams, you got the Tundra, and, you know, the F-150s are, you know, they do what you expect a big truck to do. The one that I had was pretty much loaded up with all the major options. It had the 5-liter V8, Coyote V8, so not an EcoBoost, so not quite the most powerful version of the F-150. It has the same 400 horsepower as the 3.5-liter EcoBoost, but only 410 foot-pounds of torque versus 500 with the twin-turbo V6. it's plenty. And the V8 sounds so good. You know, it's an amazing sounding engine. So this is, you know, a variation of the engine you get in a Mustang GT, although less powerful. 10-speed automatic transmission. When you go for Tremor, you get four-wheel drive. You get the two-speed transfer case. So you get four-wheel drive high, four-wheel drive low, and four auto and two-wheel drive modes as well. So you can, you know, really it helps you out if you actually are taking this ginormous truck off-road. You get locking center differential and rear diff. This one had the advanced towing capabilities, so it had the pro trailer backup assist. So if you are somewhat amateurish at backing up when you've got a trailer hooked up to your truck, this helps you out a lot. I am definitely on the amateur end of the spectrum when it comes to towing.
How often are regular people backing up the trailers? The only reason I'm really good at it is because I had to do it every single day for a summer. only reason why I'm good.
You had to do it every single day at the farm?
I worked on a school farm. We had a lot of animals, and I was always like having to put the teacher. I couldn't drive because I was 14, 15, 16. And as you know, kids can't drive when they're employees. Mm-hmm. But the teacher would like have me like back the trailer up, put the trailer on the truck, put the trailer, you know, or my boss who was like a kid who was like a year older than me,
far more mature, capable, and
slightly more like, you know, facial hair. He would have me. So that was like, it was like grunt work to do it. And so I got really good at it. And I was I'm very proud of that. A thing that I'd never, ever use. But when I do, and I get it like the first time, I'm always like, yeah. Or when I back a trailer into my driveway, exactly how I wanted on the first time. It's a great feeling, but again, it's after being, you know, punished to do that.
Well, there are several people in my neighborhood that have big camper trailers and pickup trucks, usually F-150s that they used to tow them around. So at least I know those neighbors, you know, do it at a minimum several times a year, you know, and there's a few people with boats. So there are people that do this on a, you know, at least semi-regular basis. But you know, when you do this, when you tow on a semi-regular basis, you probably know what you're doing, hopefully. You probably don't need this, pro trailer backup assist.
Well, you could still use it. Why make it? Why just use it?
Yeah.
I always figure out it's on there after I put the trailer on. That's what I've done the last few years. Cause I was like, duh, 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 duh. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't use the trailer thing.
Yeah.
It is
a really nice feature if you're not confident in your ability to back up a truck with a trailer.
Because I hardly ever have to back anything up. In fact, they'll have you do that like at drive programs. Watch how much easier this is with our technology. I'm like, dudes, even with your technology, I'm going to be lucky if I can pull this off. Because I never do it. And for someone who never does it, That really helps.
Like once a year. Hey, Nicole, go do this really weird, hard thing for no reason.
It's great. It's great. Great for drive programs with journalists that never tell.
Right. I'm like, let us show you how different it is. I'm like, dudes, it's not going to be different for me because I never do this.
Different from what? Zero?
Driving my sedan, you know.
The Tremor I had also had the fancy new tailgate, which is, ooh, you know, Ford's take on, you know, a multifunction tailgate. You know, so you get the GM tailgate that can go like six different ways, you know, and fold a middle section part of it down and or put up a stop, you know, to hold in longer stuff in your bed. You know, the Ram is basically split 1/3 and 2/3, you know, so you can fold it down as a regular tailgate or open it up barn door style, either half of it or either 1/3 of it in one direction or 2/3 in the other direction. The Ford is a little different, where, you know, in addition to folding down as a unit, the middle section, which is about half of the tailgate. So you get about a quarter of the tailgate on either side. And then the middle section opens up horizontally. So there's a hinge on the right-hand side if you're looking at the truck from the back end. It's got some stops, you know, so you can reach in to get stuff that's in the bed and, you know, just reach in through the center section without having to reach over the tailgate. Handy in that way. Also has stops on it at, I think, like 30, 60, and 90 degrees. So if you have a trailer hooked up, you can open it up and it'll stop at like about 30 degrees open. So you can reach in and grab stuff, but without having to worry about swinging it out and hitting the trailer. So that's a handy feature. It's, you know, it's a neat thing that they've done. It's a different variation. I also had the hard folding tonneau pickup box cover. So the Ram, I had a couple of weeks ago, that one had a trifold, soft tonneau. So it folded up in three sections, but the top was soft. The one on the F-150, they offer a similar one on the F-150, but they also offer a hard folding one, which is on the one that I had, which is like $1,200 for that. Wow. Yeah.
Third party is probably cheaper, just saying.
Yeah, you might be able to get it cheaper. And also the spray and bed liner was also there. There's also the retractable center step. So when you get that, that folding tailgate, it doesn't have the pull out step that you like on the regular F1, on the regular tailgate, you can get the optional step that pulls out from the middle of the tailgate and folds down. So you can step up into the bed. They don't have that with this tailgate, but they offer a retractable center step, which is just off to one side. It's not quite in the center. It's off to the side of the trailer hitch. Again, nice feature to be able to step up and reach into the back of the bed. And then also had the Blue Cruise package on here, along with the High Equipment Group, the Tremor High Equipment Group, which gives you the lock and transfer case. It does have the Torsen front differential for extra traction when you're off-roading. Modular front bumper, so if you want to take off the outer sections of it for extra approach angle when you're climbing over rocks and things like that, because, you know, we do that all the time. heated second row seats, the B&O sound system, heads-up display. And like I said, the Blue Cruise package was also on here. And I used that the other day when I was driving to Warren. You know, it works, you know, Blue Cruise works better than it did when it was first launched a couple of years ago. Still not as good as Super Cruise, though.
Super Cruise is still the best. I feel like of all of them.
Yeah, there's still a lot of times when, you know, where Super Cruise, you know, on certain curves that are tighter on the highway, you know, it'll just slow down the vehicle to a speed that it can handle. You know, the Ford system slows it down somewhat, but still asks you to put your hands back on the wheel way more than Super Cruise does. And also it has Blue Cruise has a feature where when you're passing a truck, a big truck, it will nudge you over within the lane to the opposite side away from the truck to give you a little bit of extra clearance while still staying in the lane. And on straight sections of road, that worked great. On curves, it was kind of inconsistent. And sometimes it nudged you over within the lane. Other times it didn't. And there were times when, you know, there was a truck in the center lane. I was in the left lane and it was, you know, it was getting closer than I was comfortable with.
Can you really feel it when it's moving? Like, can you tell? Is it a subtle thing or is it like?
It's very subtle. You won't feel it.
Subtle. It's more like a psychological thing. Because I remember the first Super Cruise drive. Like it felt like we were way too close to the trucks. It's just that, like, when you're driving as a human, you slightly move or just a little bit to comfort. But I don't think people really realize it.
Yeah.
It's that's what they learned with Super Cruise. So like. It's just a little.
Yeah, and Super Cruise does it, but doesn't give you any indication that it's doing it. Ford actually does in the instrument cluster. You see the icon of the vehicle in the middle of in between the lanes, and the little bubble around the vehicle that they have in their graphic, and you'll see it actually shift over in the lane a little bit, and it highlights the lane, you know, as it's shifting over a little bit. And if you look in the mirror, you will see that you're getting closer to the opposite side of the lane. So it's not just a panacea. It is actually doing it, but it's something that if you're not paying attention, you're not going to notice it. But it does give you that, you know, slight extra bit of confidence. You get that little bit of extra room as you're passing the trucks. But again, it seemed to be inconsistent. The other thing it was inconsistent about was detecting cut-ins. So, you know, if I was, you know, in Blue Cruise and a vehicle in the adjacent lane decided to cut over in front of me and between me and the vehicle in front of me, there's a few times when it didn't seem like it was catching it and slowing the vehicle down to give that extra space. It was just, you know, kept going the same speed it was going. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I tapped the brake to slow it down a little bit, you know, because it probably would have been okay. But it would have been, again, too close for comfort.
Yeah.
So just some inconsistencies in the way Blue Cruise works. Although, you know, on this one, because it had the heads-up display, even though I'm still not crazy about the instrument cluster display that Ford has, and they don't have any kind of extra lighting or anything, at least in the heads-up display when you're using Blue Cruise, it shows the steering wheel icon and it shows the hands-off or hands-on, so I can... You know, without looking down at the cluster, I can see when it wants me to take control. But even there, you know, I would like a little bit more than just that, you know, to alert me that, hey, I need to put my hands back on the wheel. On the RAM, when it wanted me to put hands on the wheel, you know, it had a haptic seat and it would buzz the seat, you know, to let me know. So, you know, that wasn't on this. So Blue Cruise is not as good on here. Overall, driving it, you know, for a big truck, it was fine. Ride quality was good. No issues there. The, you know, fuel economy was kind of mediocre. It's officially rated with the four-wheel drive 5-liter V8. It's rated at 16 miles per gallon city, 24 highway, 19 combined. I only got 16 with this one. You know, and I don't, you know, I think they don't have a separate rating for the Tremor, which sits a little bit higher and has all terrain tires, that, you know, compared to, you know, just a standard, you know, like an XLT or Lariat or something like that. And I think the testing, you know, is more reflective of those trim levels. So, you know, but 3 miles per gallon difference was, you know, it's when you're talking, you know, at the low end of the fuel economy spectrum, 3 miles per gallon makes quite a bit of difference in terms of how much fuel you're actually going to use, how much you're going to consume. So it's, you know, it's a good truck, but it's also expensive. You know, and we talked about this with the RAM, you know, the RAM Limited I had was almost $90,000. The Tremor starts, the space sticker price on the Tremor is about $60,000, or $65,000. This one that I had as equipped, $83,970.
That's like 3.5 Mavericks.
Yeah. And you know what else? The Tremor, you know what? Take a guess at what the payload of the Tremor is.
Is it the same? Is it less than the Maverick?
It's about the same as a Maverick, 1,400 pounds.
That's the crazy thing is that people are like, and then the Maverick like it has a better payload than like the Hummer EV truck.
Yeah.
Just like, wait, what?
But, well, you know, and again, this is partly because, you know, it's got the off-road setup. You can get V8 F-150s that have 2,500 pound payload. But when you go with an off-road package that has a lift kit and all-terrain tires and you've added weight for all these skid plates and everything that are on there, you know, that takes away from the payload. And so now you've got this big truck, you know, which has tons of room for five people inside, but only has 1,400 pounds of payload. You know, one of the nice things about these crew cab, these full-size crew cab trucks, if you're in the back seat, it's like riding in a limo. I mean, you have tons of legroom, tons of headroom. It is very spacious back there, much more so than a Maverick. But most people probably aren't carrying passengers back there most of the time. I mean, most of the F-150s I see, you know, which are tend to be crew cabs, usually only have one person in them or two people. And so, you know, that's kind of wasted space. And 84,000, you want to take a guess at the destination charge?
1,695.
What did you say, Nicole?
1,400.
1,995.
Oh my gosh.
Jeez, that's a lot.
They took the wrong lesson from Stellantis and they charged the same $2,000 delivery charge on their trucks now.
Oof.
That's too much.
Oof.
Yeah. That's
part of me while I keep saying oof.
So that is the F-150 Tremor for 2024. You do get this nice bronze trim, you know, in a few places, like on the wheels and on the grill. You know, there's a little trim bar across the center of the grill. It's bronze colored. It looks pretty cool, but it's a lot of truck.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
So let us move on. let's see what's happening this week. So what was your least favorite part of the Toyota BZ4X?
It's pick one thing.
That it charged hella slow for a vehicle that's got over 200 miles.
I know that's what I'm supposed to say is charge hella slow, but I hated the tunnel-y kind of view.
Okay.
Tubes.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't changed the dashboard yet. Or the instrument panel. Out, that tunnel,
you're
tunnel
out.
The tunnel is still there, but they did at least on the all wheel drive versions of the BZ4X. They have made some improvements in the charging because the BZ4X for at least in North America, it's kind of weird in that they actually have two. There's a lot of weird things about it, but they have two different battery suppliers. So front wheel drive BZ4Xs have batteries supplied by Panasonic. All wheel drive BZ4Xs have a battery that is just ever so slightly larger. It's like 72 kilowatt hours versus 71. And it's supplied by CATL. The CATL battery, the all-wheel drive BZ4Xs, even the front-wheel drive ones don't charge particularly fast, but the all-wheel drive versions charge really slow. When EV Pulse did their testing, their charge testing on it, it's nominally rated at 100 kilowatts peak, but it doesn't stay at 100 kilowatts for very long. And when EV Pulse did their testing, they only got it only peaked at 86 kilowatts.
Oy.
And it only stayed there.
That's until, what my Kona does, and my Kona is like a lot cheaper and old.
Yeah, well, and your Kona probably stays at 86 kilowatts a lot longer than this one does.
It sticks around up there at 74, yeah, it's like 75 for a little while.
Yeah, I mean previously the BZ4X, it would get to 86, and then before you got even 20% state of charge, it would start tapering down. And when they did 0 to 95% charge test on the, or from, yeah, 95% charge test on the BZ4X, it took 3 hours and 12 minutes to charge that. So for 2024, they
It just says there's a recording error. Open the recording tab to learn more. I don't know if you want to.
Not on my end.
Is that me?
Still.
I don't even have a recording error tab.
Yeah. No, it's still recording here.
Network connection lost. I'm talking to you. How can it be lost?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right. I just want to talk for a little while.
Okay.
All right. Go on. Sorry.
So,
sorry about that.
Anyway, it took over 3 hours to charge the thing. With the 2023 model. For 2024, they've updated it. So they changed up the thermal management system for the CATL battery. So it now does a lot better job of managing the temperature of the battery. And it nominally will top out at 150 kilowatts. The EV Pulse guys tested it again. They got it up to 104 kilowatts, which is better, still not great. But it held that 100 over 100 kilowatts up to 30%, and then it ramps down a lot slower. So they managed to get from 10 to 80% charge in 36 minutes, which is not great, but not
better,
not nearly as horrible as it was.
Not as bad.
That's an architecture like issue, just top to bottom. That's, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're thinking about getting a BZ4X, a 2024 BZ4X, it will charge a lot faster than before.
Yeah. Most of the time you're going to be charging at home.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada.
Let's see. Let's stick with charging for a minute.
yeah.
Why not?
So Electrify America announced that they are doing a little pilot program at about 10 of their stations. I suspect that they will probably expand this across the board. But for now, it's about 10 stations where they are limiting charging to 85% state of charge.
And what's the rationale for that? Because we shouldn't go higher than that as a rule, or like why?
Well, generally on most vehicles, once you get to 80% charge, they start ramping down the charge rate dramatically anyway. So usually you get that fast charge, up to 80%, and then the last 20% takes forever because it's to protect the battery. And unless you are doing, a really long road trip, and there's a really long gap between charging stations, you don't need to charge all the way to 100%. And so because vehicles slow down once they get to 80 anyway, EA is saying, okay, once you get to 85, we're just going to cut you off. If you try to unplug it, plug it back in, it'll see, oh, you're at 85. Sorry, can't do it. And then they'll kick you out. And that is to reduce congestion at the charging stations so that people don't have to wait around as long, because you're going to get most of your charge in that 85% range, and then get out of the way, let somebody else charge. So they're focusing on some stations that have a lot of traffic, a lot of utilization. It's to help people have a better charging experience, basically. I think it sounds like what they're doing right now is they're just kind of, stopping at 85% across the board. I think what would make more sense, I think it's actually a good idea, when there's a lot of traffic, a lot of people waiting to use the chargers. I think it would probably make more sense to make this variable so that, you know, depending on the station, depending on what the how many people are utilizing that station, you know, maybe have a camera there that looks, you know, how many people might be waiting in line. You know, if there's nobody waiting, you know, or if all the chargers aren't full, then let them go as long as they want. But if all the chargers are full, then start cutting them off at 85%. And if there's people waiting, you know, do it that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got all this fancy AI stuff. You know, it's not that hard to put together a model of, you know, based on, you know, what times of day, what times of year, like if it's a long holiday weekend, lots of people traveling, you know, where the stations are, you know, and do it selectively, you know, where you get the highest greatest amount of traffic at a charging station, then do that 85% limiting rather than just doing it across the board.
Yeah, because I feel like doing it, it's like there's one person there, you're just going to cap them at 85. There's empty station, why do that? Maybe they want to sit and charge really slowly, or maybe wherever they're going, maybe they need that little extra bit of range, even though they're going to sit at that charger forever. If they're on a road trip or something, you might need that to get to the next station, depending on where you are. So yeah, I think it'd be nice if they refined that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, you know, traveling in LA and back last week in the I-7 there, you know, sometimes you'll go up and you see someone, they're charging like 87%. I'm like, come on, dude. And there's like people waiting. I'm like, I'm like, all right, you're done. You need to move on. The rest of us we all have places to go. It doesn't even need to be like fancy AI. I mean, if you notice that the stations are being, if you have four stations and one station goes, available and then is immediately unavailable, and you're like, oh wait, this is a busy area.
Yeah, it's not that hard to figure out.
And also you can base it on time. I mean, they're going to say, oh, at every day at 4 o'clock, between 4 and 6, the station is always busy. Let's cap it at this point. But yeah, I think it's in some instances. Yeah. I think it's, you know, especially busy like holidays, when you're driving, I'm like, okay, we got people waiting. Let's get going, guys. But when it's like, you know, 3 in the morning and you're just like, hey, I've got to go to work and, you know, whatever, I'm just going to sit here and charge for a little while. And yeah, that's fine. Also, we need more level 2 chargers around these level 3 chargers,
mm-hmm.
shopping centers.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. All right. Are either of you familiar with the Dakar Rally?
I'm familiar.
I heard it's a rally that's in Dakar.
Yeah. And it's crazy, crazy. That's what I know.
Well, cars just break down.
Actually, despite the name, it is no longer in Dakar. Hasn't been for quite some time. It was the Paris-Dakar rally, ran from Paris to Dakar in Senegal. And usually took place like the first week of January, like, you know, right on, I think they started on New Year's Day. And it was like about 8 or 9 days, usually, across the Sahara Desert. Then they stopped, they had some issues with bandits and stuff in the Sahara.
Bandits, I know that's a bad word. Like, bandits are bad guys, but bandits, I immediately think of a man on a horse with like a mask, like a bandana around his neck, yeah, with a rifle. Like, bandits, that's such a like Wild West kind of thing.
Well, that's kind of like what it was. I mean, it was not that far off. I don't think they weren't on horseback usually, but you know, they had people, you know, attacking the competitors when they were doing this.
Wow.
And so they moved it to South America for a while, for about 10 years, from 2009 to 2019. They ran across South America from Brazil to Chile, I think, or to Peru. Then in 2020, they moved it to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it's still this crazy week-long desert rally. They run about 500 to 600 miles a day. It's ever so slightly tougher than the Rebel Rally.
Yeah. Just a skosh. Oh my God. Yeah.
But you know, for most of its history, you know, you've had companies, you know, and teams building these specialized vehicles for this rally, you know, just because of the nature of the competition, they would, build, you know, custom built vehicles just for this race. And the latest of which is from Ford that they just unveiled. This year for the 2024 rally, they built as a proof of concept, they built a specialized Ranger, which was only vaguely related to a Ranger. I think it had the headlights and taillights from a Ranger, and that's about it. For the 2025 rally, they have built a purpose-built vehicle called the Ford Raptor T1 Plus, which is...
Isn't the T1... Is that what they called? No, the Terminator's T2. I'm sorry, T1.
T1. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. That's all I could think of was Terminator as well.
Look at this thing. If you had this running along, if you look at this picture and you had that music, totally works.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what's great is this is the Raptor with the best front visibility because they've actually put a slope on the hood. This is a Raptor you can actually see in front of you.
Well, I think the engine is actually in the back. It's a mid-engine, I think.
That is so cool looking.
Yeah, it's got a heavily modified 5-liter Coyote V8 built by M Sport in the UK. They also build the engines for the Mustang GT3s, and they've been a long time operator of Ford's World Rally Championship program. But I think one of the cool things about this, when they're out on a stage, there's no pit stops for these things. And so they have to carry a bunch of spare parts and things, with them on the vehicle, things like spare tires. There are support trucks that also run the rally, but they tend to be running way behind the actual competitors. So on this thing, on the Raptor T1 Plus, if you look on the sides, they've got compartments on either side with a spare tire built in there.
That's cool.
There's a little latch under the R in Red Bull that looks like it opens it up so you can get to the tire. Yeah. I've been looking through the photos trying to see. I'm like, how did they get to this tire?
Is there a latch in there? Wait, where is
it? Yeah, like right under the R.
R
Red Bull on the door.
Oh, you might see the tiny little silver little tiny thing. I bet that's how it opens. That's really cool.
She's very excited about latches.
No, it's just cool how they did it. I love that it's like, it looks like it's...
No, I said I'm very excited about latches. Oh.
Don't mock me. It's cool. Oh, never mind. You're fine.
So this thing, it's, like I said, it's purpose built. It's got a steel tube frame, carbon fiber body panels. They're planning to run it in three races. They're going to run two rallies ahead of Dakar in January. The first competition is going to be in a couple of weeks, beginning of August, in Hungary at the 2024 Baja Hungary, after they're done showing it off at Goodwood, this weekend. And then they're going to take it to Morocco in October for the Rally du Maroc. And then head to Saudi Arabia for the Dakar rally in January. So going to be interesting to see how this thing does. They've at least got a good driving lineup. Carlos Sainz Sr., father of the current F1 driver, longtime multiple world rally champion, multiple Dakar champion. I think Carlos Sainz has won the Dakar 5 or 6 times now, at least. He's going to be the lead driver in one of the trucks. So they should be okay. I think they're planning to run 3 of these in the rally in 2025.
The third truck, lottery system.
Yeah. So, hey, maybe we can apply. Maybe we can get in.
If you buy enough cans of Coke Classic and you turn them in, you can be entered.
No, you got to buy cans of Red Bull.
Cans of Red Bull. Oh, yeah. Well, shoot, I should be in this truck. And I'm literally... I've paid for so many F1 races. Someone give me a car. Come on, Red Bull.
6,213 miles total distance.
So. I thought that was the amount of Red Bulls I've drank.
Well, could be that too.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I got a problem.
Okay. Let's see what else we got here. You guys both use nav systems, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I like getting where I'm going.
I do. Me too.
Once upon a time, there was no such thing as GPS. That's a relatively new phenomenon. I think the GPS satellites were launched in the late 80s or early 90s. So they had to figure, you know, do you remember paper maps? We used to have paper maps that you'd fold out.
Yeah,
one of those were kids. Maps.
Yes.
Yeah, go on a family road trip and, you know, dad would go to AAA or, you know, stop at the gas station and buy this big paper map. And
how about the atlas that was like,
oh yeah, road atlases,
right? That would sit on the floor and underneath a seat or something, and you pull it out when you're finally lost, and it was like covered with dust and ugh, yeah,
blow it, everyone cough a little.
Yeah. We'll get where we're going.
For those to be useful, for a map to be useful, you know, first you have to figure out where you are, you know, and if you're already lost, that could be a problem.
That was always the fun part.
You always just had to drive until you, on the road you were on, until you saw a crossroad.
Yeah.
And then you pulled over and then you just looked, you just ran your finger along the road until you found that crossroad. You're like, okay, we're right here.
Yeah. I remember doing that too. Like you're on a highway and you're like, where the heck have we gone? And how do we get ourselves? And you like follow, like you're saying, okay, we're at exit 32. Follow 32. Okay, here's where we are.
Then you would get a sextant and a slide ruler out.
Yep.
And then you would figure out where you need
exactly.
to go. For all the kids who are listening, that's how we had to use sextants and slide rulers in order to navigate the world.
You still know how to use a sextant?
You just put it here. There's a horizon. You look up. It's got the little thing. There's the moon.
You need the compass. I could compass my way if I knew what ticket.
Oh, yeah.
When you did the Rebel, were you the driver or the navigator?
I was the driver.
Oh, okay.
It's like,
you still have to know how to use a compass and how to use Latin Launch to figure out where you are in these checkpoints and stuff, because you double check each other and there's some things you need to teamwork, makes the dream work kind of thing. But I was the driver. My goals, I would be pointed and, you know, go that way. Okay, how do I get that? And she kind of makes sure that I ain't gone too far right or left. Like, nope, you need to go that way, but swing it back left a little bit, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, before all that, there were early primitive navigation systems. And the other day I was scrolling through Instagram and this post popped up on Instagram. It's from like early 1970s British TV show. It was a demonstration of a very early generation, navigation system. So this is from 1971. It combines a cassette tape. Yeah. And it's like, how many of you out there even know what a cassette tape is?
Oh
anymore?
My gosh.
Cassette tapes are coming back. I have an album that I'm putting out on a cassette tape. People are like, cool. My Walkman's broken though. I figured that out the other day.
He's showing in this video, this box that he's pulled out of the dashboard. That's not the cassette tape. Looks like something. It's like, okay, guys, we only had spare parts, but if you use this, we can save the world. Like, what is that thing? Oh my god!
It's basically a dead reckoning navigation system.
It is essentially what it is.
So, you know, this very primitive thing here. You know, there's probably some
chips and
accelerometers
stuff.
And a gyroscope in there that is measuring. You know.
Wait,
changes in direction and speed.
Did he put a little?
I think it's just figuring out the how far you're driving based on the
rotation of the wheel?
Your odometer.
Oh yeah.
I think you're
it's
right.
You're giving him way too much.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't even that sophisticated.
It's literally just figuring out how many miles you're driving. You're like, okay, we've gone 7.8 miles, and then it cues. Remember those little picture books? You open it,
audio cues from the tape.
The thing that's like, turn right on motorway 43, and then you turn right.
So do you need a tape for every different place you need to go?
Yes.
For every route you want to take.
Oh my god!
And you always have to start at the same spot. You can't like start at
Wait
home.
Wait a second. Then
you have to find like a certain spot that you start, and then you start everything, and then you drive.
This is almost as stupid as this 1971 guy's hair. This is ridiculous.
Oh, he's got good hair. Look at all that hair.
That's good 1971 hair.
That's a good 20 pounds of hair right there.
Good for that. It's just and the blazer with the plaid thing. Who is this guy?
It's 1971.
It's 1971 and he's British. As the style was at the time.
Sideburns. Look at the sideburns, guys.
Yeah. And look at that. Was that a watch with the big, giant, wide
Oh, my gosh. This whole video thing is just fabulous. That and the fact that the steering wheel looks like you could just break it in half. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's really wide because they didn't have power steering, so you need as much torque as possible from your arms.
There's actually a little, like, dynamo label on that little thing he's plugging into his fancy device. Did you see that? Like, you've dynamo labeled all your directions. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty bonkers. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. I guess. So, you know, technology doesn't just spring up out of the ground finished. Yeah. So this was an early nav system, in-car nav system. The link is in the show notes. So, you know, please take a minute and check it out.
You got to watch it. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
There's like a little interface system that they had to build, and it attaches to the cable to your transmission, so you know how many miles you're going, and you had to stick in for tires you had to put a whole different circuit board. Every tire side had a different circuit board. You had to plug into this box. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was all hard coded on these little circuit cards that you plug in. It's pretty crazy. Okay, let's see. Mazda, you talked about the CX-70 earlier. Next step down in the lineup is the CX-50, and it's getting some updates for 2025, including first Mazda CX-50 hybrid.
Woohoo!
Ooh.
They have
the good news. It sounds like I'm being sarcastic. But
they have basically taken the RAV4 hybrid powertrain and put it into a CX-50.
Eh. Okay.
There you go.
Including the engine. So it's all-wheel drive, 219 horsepower. It's exactly what you get if you buy a RAV4 hybrid, except, you know, depending on your taste, you know, might be more stylish and, you know, have a nicer interior than the Mazda or than the Toyota. It goes on sale this fall. Let's see, where was that tab here? Starts at $33,970 for the CX-50 hybrid preferred, and gets a combined, it's rated to combine 38 miles per gallon, which is 2 miles per gallon less than the RAV4 hybrid, but that's because it weighs about 200 pounds more than the RAV4 hybrid.
Oh. Yeah. Every Mazda comes with a sack of potatoes. Who doesn't love free potatoes?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're not free.
Does that mean the fuel economy gets better as you eat the potatoes?
Yeah, you have to eat the potatoes. Okay. But then it gets worse because you're eating potatoes, so it's just carbohydrates.
So you're just transferring your weight from the sack of potatoes in the back to your backside.
Into you, which is essentially what I've been doing for the last 5 years, just transferring weight from potatoes to my body.
Okay. Got it. So the fuel economy will stay the same then?
Yeah.
All right. The Ford Capri. What do you guys think about the Ford Capri? Do you remember the Ford Capri?
I don't think anyone really remembers the Ford Capri. I can help it.
You remember it? I mean, I know. Yeah, I cannot pretend that I do.
Oh my God! They have a little thing for the ad, which is cool, athletic, past, rebellious, intelligent Capri. I didn't notice that until just now.
The Capri was a sports coupe built by Ford of Europe back in the 1970s until about 84 or so. Which was sort of, you know, their take on a Mustang, but smaller, lighter, you know, more fuel efficient, you know, to fit the European market.
This is just for Europe. This isn't for us, right?
Just for Europe.
Yeah. Okay.
So the original Capri went away in the mid 80s. The name was revived for a while here. They actually did sell the European Capri here in the US in the 1970s. And then in 1979, when the Fox Body Mustang was introduced, they did a Mercury version of it with a different front end and a different hatchback that they called the Capri. And then that went away after a few years. And then in about 1989-90, they introduced, at the same time that the Mazda Miata came out, they brought out a new Mercury Capri convertible, to compete with the Miata.
I remember the Mercury Capri. It was not cool.
It was built in Australia. It was front wheel drive and it was not good.
It looked wrong.
Well, there's that. And also I drove one once and, you know, compared to my Miata, it was kind of flexible. You could feel the whole chassis flexing when you went down the road. It was not good.
Kind of flexible.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Capri name is back on something completely different. It's now basically a Polestar 2 with a VW ID4 powertrain.
Yay, finally.
Yeah.
We don't have enough MAB Polestar 2s going around, so... It does, yeah. It looks like, especially the profile, like, is that a Polestar 2? Okay, yeah, sure, okay,
yeah,
that'll work. Okay, fine.
Yeah, when they revealed this thing a couple of days ago, it's like, what? I knew they announced the European Ford Explorer, which is also based on the same platform, the MEB platform, last year. And they said that they were going to do a coupe-like SUV based on the same platform. And, you know, this is basically a Polestar 2.
Who is this gentleman in these pictures?
I have no idea.
Eric Cantona.
Yeah, like I said, I have no idea who he is.
Doing this like, ha-ha, come to
me. Oh, he's like a footballer.
Oh, okay.
Cantona. Is he?
Yeah.
I'm going to Google Eric.
French actor, singer, and former professional footballer. Oh, large, physical, strong, hardworking, tenacious player.
Okay, you know what he looks like when you Google him? Who's the guy, Roy, from Ted Lasso, the one who says all the time? There's a picture, and it totally looks like that's what he's saying in this picture.
Okay, that makes sense. So they're going to offer it in rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive form, and it'll have a range of... They're saying up to 400 kilometers on the WLTP test, which is about 280, 290 miles, which means real world, it'll probably be somewhere between about 250 and 270 miles, which is, you know, it's not bad, but it's, you know,
great.
Not great. It's 400 miles, not 400 kilometers, 400 miles. Yeah. So it'll be a little over 300 miles. So that'd be all right.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice, you know, if they did something, you know, a little more original.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like, well, this is working. Let's just do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Capri.
Ford Capri.
If you're in Europe, you'll be able to get one, I think, later this year.
You get a Volkswagen architecture Ford vehicle that looks like a Polestar.
Yeah.
There you go. If that's what you want, they've got you covered. What is with these pictures, though? Him sneaking out and looking behind the bumper like, oh.
Yeah, the pictures are the best. Go to the Ford media page and then go down to the Legend is Back photos, and it's just very weird.
Did you see him with his foot on the rear tire?
Yeah, he's like, hey. Because we don't have any context who this person is. It becomes even more like...
If we were French, we'd probably be fans of him. But
yeah, I'm sure, like in Europe, he's probably like really, really famous as a soccer player.
If he's a famous soccer player, what did he have habitually seen?
No, he's a footballer.
Or footballer. Did he habitually
you know, out around a corner? The British are the ones who gave us the word soccer, so they can just, yeah.
It's odd.
Just a fun reminder that we didn't come up with that word by ourselves in America.
So Nissan's got a new trim level for the Rogue for 2025. They're bringing the Rock Creek edition to the Rogue platform. They launched it on Pathfinder a couple of years ago. And so now Rogue gets to be a little more off-roady. What do you think?
It's cute.
Yeah.
I like it when they do those little I have a thing for when they do cute trims, like do fun things to make it look a little more interesting, give it a little more eye candy. I like little red bits on there. It's cool.
And they've got the three horizontal slots in the top part of the grill, like the old Pathfinders, you know, and they brought it back on the current gen Pathfinder, and they added it here now as well. And got some little bits of red trim, no tow hooks or anything, you know, it's not really an off-roader. You know, it's more kind of off-road look, off-road light.
Off-road light, yeah. But it looks, I mean, it's fun, like all the little red bits, the accents on the wheels and the bumper. There's red inside. It gets that cool little mountainy looking badge by the, you know, by the where
it comes with the mountain. It comes with the hood with not the hood, the roof rack.
Yeah,
comes. Well, there you go. That's all you really need. It comes with a hood and a roof rack. Woo-hoo! Aren't you buying this?
Yeah. And one other thing they're adding to the Rogue for 2025 is ProPilot Assist version 2. or actually 2.1. So this is their Nissan's hands-free driving assist, which debuted on the Aria, which is, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, hand, I mean, again, hands-free, like, what do I do with my hands? So yeah. I just end up putting my hands on the wheel. I had this whole conversation with a coworker who was looking at a Lyric. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Lyric's real nice. And he's like, oh, what? He was asking about the hands-free system. I'm like, what do you do with your hands when you're sitting there? You just put them in your lap quietly, like you're in like if you're in trouble at school. Just put your hands in your lap. Everyone, be quiet. Put your hands in your lap.
This is when you're really in trouble.
And then I just end up just putting back on the wheel because I'm like, well, this is where they go anyway. So,
well, if I'm on a phone call while I'm in the car, you know, I tend to talk with my hands anyway. So, you know, my hands are waving around. So if I don't have to put them on the wheel, that works out well.
You can use it to eat a burrito or a cookie.
Yeah.
You can't eat a burrito and drive. That's madness. Unless you like wearing burrito and having burrito on your seat.
Like a true proper, like burrito. That's that. Yeah. That's you just pull over and use the little fold out thing like they have in the F-150. Like, you know, I just need to pull over. You can eat a quesadilla, you know, but.
Well, speaking of those driver assist systems, IHS did a study where they did some research. They looked at, you know, data from many, many hundreds of crashes and they focused mainly on Nissan vehicles with ProPilot Assist, not the hands-free version, but the original version, and a bunch of BMW vehicles because they were able to get data for those. And basically what they found was that, you know, traditional driver assist or like crash avoidance systems like automatic emergency braking, blind spot warning, and lane departure prevention actually did provide some real world benefit in terms of reducing crashes. So they compared data from vehicles that had these features versus vehicles from similar model years that did not have these features. And they found that the vehicles that had the features had fewer crashes, which is good. That's what those systems are supposed to do, is reduce the number of crashes. But when they started looking at, you know, hands-on level two systems like lane centering and adaptive cruise control, and comparing that, they found that there was no, you would think that there would be a further incremental reduction in crashes compared to just that base level of crash avoidance features. And there was no statistically significant difference in the number of crashes. So, you know, they're going to continue studying this, but basically, you know, they say that these are convenience features. They're not safety features. No matter what Elon Musk says, they're not safety features.
It's, you know, people get complacent with these features is what happens. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, if there was any benefit, it's automatically reduced because they're just like, well, I can do other things. You're like, no, man, you gotta pay attention. Whenever someone asks me about these things, you're like, oh, the driver assist, the automated driving. I'm like, nope. First of all, it's not that. So get that out of your mind. And also, you still got to pay attention. You still got to watch the road. You still got to do all these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice on a long drive, like drivers, like mostly, when I would have that i7, mostly all I care about is adaptive cruise control on a long drive. Like lane centering, it just, like, I end up turning, you know, I'll use it for a little while, I end up turning it off because I'm just like, well, my hands are here and I don't need to fight with the car when it's making a small mistake.
Well, so. And, you know, thing like yesterday, we went out to the lake, took the dogs out to the lake, and I was driving a Mach-E Rally with Blue Cruise, and, you know, there were a couple of instances where, you know, Blue Cruise was keeping the car centered in the lane, but, you know, there's a car in the adjacent lane just kind of slowly drifting over towards me. It's like, you know, I had to put my hands on the wheel and, you know, move over manually.
Yeah,
because it could not, you know, there was a risk, you know, of a collision. You know, it turns out, you know, the car never fully encroached on my lane, but it was getting too close for comfort. And so that was not good, you know. And that's, if you have to pay that much attention anyway, it's like, what's the point, like you said, of taking your hands off the wheel?
Yeah.
Years ago, like quite a few years ago, when they were talking about things being relatively new still, And one of the things they had said is, you know, is there even just looking at the safety stuff, like this supposed to be safer, that's supposed to be safer. The one that they, the only one they had a really significant measurable improvement for was automatic emergency braking. That was the big one. Like it actually reduced the number of crashes. It reduced the severity of crashes because, you know, it was slowing you down instead of hitting them at, you know, 75, you're hitting them at 40, whatever. Slowed you down even if you still had a crash. And I've seen, that was a long time ago. They said, you know, that's, as things were coming in, it's like, all this other stuff is great and might help you. It's not like a huge, it's not making huge differences. AEB was the only one that was just a dramatic difference when they compare vehicles with and without that were the same type of vehicles, yada, yada.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
All right. Last one for this week is, of course, we all know that EV sales have completely collapsed. Nobody's buying EVs anymore.
No one's buying EVs anymore.
Get rid of them all.
Yeah. It's completely wasted time. Yeah. Why
have we invested all this money? Like the internet. It was a fad.
Yeah. Not entirely true. In fact, not true at all. In Q2, we had the highest EV sales ever in the United States. I compiled the numbers from our data source, EV sales were up. We're on track right now for about 1.3 and 1.4 million EVs sold in the U.S. this year, compared to about 1.1 last year. Some manufacturers are way up. Ford's way up. GM's doing well. Hyundai Motor Group is up significantly. And despite what you might hear, Ford as a brand is number two behind Tesla in terms of EV sales in the U.S. But as a company, they're actually third. Number two in EV sales in Q2, again, was Hyundai Motor Group, including Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis, with about 66,000 EVs sold in the quarter. One of the big things, you know, over the last several years, the last 3 years, Tesla's share of EV sales in the U.S. has been declining steadily. And in Q2, it dropped below 50% for the first time. Their share of the EV market in Q2 was just 49.7%.
That totally makes sense because there's more competition now.
But yeah. Also, that's a lot of cars.
Oh, yeah.
50% of a market. They should still be. I mean, this is a smaller slice of
a bigger pie.
Yeah, this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, especially right. Tesla. They knew this was coming.
Right.
But also 50%.
Yeah.
It's so much.
It's still a huge. As the market gets bigger, 50% of a market that was tiny, now it's 50% of a market is huge. I wonder what the number.
Well, they had 80% in 2021.
Okay.
And it's dropped.
Like, I wonder what the, as the market gets bigger, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to figure, like, it would be in numbers that I'm not going to crunch, but
it's just more. Yeah. The market's bigger, which means there's more choices. As there's more choices, more and more people are picking something that's not a Tesla. And when you look at reviews, I think there was a review of the new Model 3, and in the review was, and this is my own experience with driving Teslas now, is that years ago, like, that was the best EV you can get. Now at the price point and in those markets, there's other EVs that are better. And outside of the Tesla charging network and the routing, those are their killer apps. Then outside of that, you're just like, well, we're getting the charging network and there's apps that help me with the, I used a better route planner to go to LA and back.
Yeah.
It was pretty much like, oh, here.
And even other manufacturers are embedding better routing in their navigation systems as well.
The Mercedes I have right now, the routing is way better.
Yeah.
Like it actually says, go here and charge. And it's just like, you know, as if you had a Tesla, but without the charging network.
Yeah. And, you know, Tesla's sales the last two quarters have actually been down sequentially. Their sales have basically flatlined in North America. They haven't been growing. So the overall market's growing. Tesla's sales are down and their market share is down. So it's a combination of both more competition and just, you know, fewer people wanting to buy that particular brand. One thing that was interesting when I was going through the data is over the last 3 years, Tesla's overall share, not just of EVs, but their overall share of the U.S. market has actually been surprisingly flat. at just shy of 4%. It's been hovering right around between 3.8 and 4% for the last 4 years. And you know, hasn't really grown at all for some time now.
I mean, you don't have anything that's exciting that's coming to market. You have like this one truck that like most people don't really like.
I saw one on the road here yesterday.
It's everyone's favorite thing to make fun of on the internet. But the Model 3, the model, you know, we changed some headlights and did some few tweaks here and there, but you can't expect people to still be excited about vehicles that look almost exactly the same or haven't had a really major change in the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 years. I mean, it's mm-hmm. that's why automakers refresh their lineup, because they know people get complacent and they get bored and they're like, oh, I want something new and fresh. And if Tesla isn't giving people something new and fresh, but Hyundai and Ford and everyone else is, then I mean, even the Bolt got an upgrade and it got new before it went away.
All right. So that's all I've got for this week. Anything else that you guys want to talk about before we say goodbye?
No, I think that does it for me.
All right.
Nah, I got nothing.
Nothing.
All right. Then we will talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes. It's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.